Today's daf is Chulin daf Samach Aleph. The topic of today's daf is the simani kashrus of Oaf. How we know which birds are kosher, which birds are not kosher. But before we get to that, we still have to finish up a little bit of Agadita from yesterday's Gemara. We are holding on daf Samach Amid Beis, about 10 lines before the end of the page. Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, harbe mikraos sheru'in lisrof vehein hein gufei Torah. There are a lot of psukim in the Torah that really should be burnt because they're absolutely useless, or so they seem. They seem that they have absolutely they teach us absolutely nothing, and nevertheless, they are actually gufei Torah, that while at first glance it seems to teach us nothing, in reality it teaches us some very profound messages. And the Gemara is going to give four such examples of psukim that seem to have no teachings and no value for the Jewish people, and nevertheless are in fact gufei Torah. Now the expression that ru'uyin lisrof seems to be a little bit strong. Ben Yoyada points out that what's ro'i lisrof? Apikorsus is ro'i lisrof. The Sifrei Tzedukim are ro'i lisrof. What do you mean? If these psukim that we're going to quote are meaningless, is that ro'i lisrof? Every book that doesn't have some major value is ro'i to be burnt? So the Ben Yoyada explains that it doesn't mean that these are psukim that at first glance it would seem that they're apikorsus and therefore you have to right away go and burn them. No, what it's referring to is the Gemara Masechet Shabbos Daf Kuf Tzvav Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that Kisvei HaKodesh, you're allowed to save from a fire on Shabbos. But these psukim seem to not belong in Kisvei HaKodesh. They seem to not belong in Tanakh. And because of that, it would seem that you wouldn't be matzil mipnei adaleika on Shabbos, that you wouldn't be allowed to save them from a fire on Shabbos. That's what it means, ruim lisrof, that it's ruim lisarev, that they should be burnt if they were in that situation of a fire raging on Shabbos, and you have to save, and yet you have to leave certain things, and only save that which is Kisvei HaKodesh. That's what it would seem these psukim are in the category of, not in the category of Sifrei Tzedukim or anything of that nature. So anyway, let's see some of the examples. Number one, the Gemara says, the pasuk tells us, Avim Ayoshim B'Chatzerim Ad Aza, tells us about the Avim, certain people that were living in Chatzerim Ad Aza, Kaftorim Hayotzim Kaftor, the pasuk goes on, Hishmidum Ve'ish V'sachtam, that the Kaftorim destroyed them and dwelled in their, and they destroyed them and they lived in their place. So my Nafkalan Mina, who cares about Milchamos between the Kaftorim and the Avim, and who cares what's going, how these lands got into the hands that they are currently in when the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael? When they go into Eretz Yisrael, whoever's there, we'll take it from them. Why does it matter that what the history of that land is? So Mida Ashvei Avimelech Avram, it's because Avram Avinu made a Shvuat Avimelech in Tishkor Li L'Nini L'Nechti, that Avram Avinu was not supposed to wage war or do anything with the descendants of Avimelech. So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, so if the Jewish people are not going to be, gave their word that they're not going to take away the land from the descendants of Avimelech, so Leisu Kaftorim Lifkumei Avim. So he said, let the Kaftorim come, take it away from the Avim, Dahinu Plishtim, the Avim are the Plishtim, who are the descendants of Avimelech. So he said, let the Kaftorim come and take it away from the Avim first, then the Jewish people will come in and they'll take it away from the Kaftorim. So that's why it's important to know that the Kaftorim took it from the Avim to teach us how HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up so that we will be able to get Eretz Yisrael, that all of this had to fall into place in order for us to be able to conquer Eretz Yisrael. We have a very similar second example. Ki cheshbon ir sichon melech amori hi v'hu nilcham b'melech moav. The pasuk tells us that Cheshbon was a city of Sichon, Melech Amori, which was won in a war from the Melech Moav, that Sichon got it from Moav. So my nafkamina, who cares that when we go and take the city of Cheshbon that Sichon got from Moab, who cares that Sichon got it from Moab? We're taking it from Sichon. Why do we care that Sichon got it from Moab? So Damla, Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Kadosh Baruch Hu told Klal Yisrael, Al Teitzar Asmav. We already have a mitzvah. The Torah says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us Al Teitzar Asmav, Al Tiskor B'Milchama, that we're not allowed to wage war with Moab, as the pasuk goes on to say, Ki lo etein l'chamei artzu Yerusha, ki livnei lot nasat yisar Yerusha. We are not given the land of Moab as Yerusha. We're not allowed to wage war with Moab. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, if there's a rule in place that the Jewish people are not allowed to wage war with Moab, so here's what's going to happen. Leisei Sichon, Leipuk mi Moav. Let Sichon come, take it away from Moav. There's no restriction on waging war with Sichon, so we're going to be able to wage war with Sichon and take it from Sichon. V'hainu domar Rav Papa, Amunu Moav, Tiaru B'Sichon. And that's what Rav Papa taught, that Amunu Moav, Tiaru B'Sichon. What does it mean, Tiaru B'Sichon? Sichon was the hechsher for us to be able to go and conquer that land. Had it still remained in the hands of Moav, it would have been Tamei to us. We would not have been able to conquer the land. It's only because Sichon took it that we were able to conquer the land. Now Chazal have another drush of Cheshbon, when we talk about Cheshbon, right? Bo Cheshbon, Chazal darshan Bo v'nachshav Cheshbono Shalolam, that we should make the Cheshbon of the Schar Mitzvah Keneged Aveira and Schar Aveira Keneged Mitzvah. That's the Cheshbon Shalolam, that we should think about what the value of doing any time we want to do an Aveira because there's a certain Taiva or a certain perceived benefit from the Aveira, we should think about that perceived benefit versus the downside, the asa lavo, of what we're going to pay for that avera. And the same with the mitzvah. Anytime a mitzvah seems difficult and it seems that the mitzvah is too challenging for us, we should think about the great benefit of doing that mitzvah. Rav Nevenzahl is a beautiful piece where he discusses what is the connection between that. Why of all places to teach me about cheshbon shel olam, about making that cheshbon of schar mitzvah keneged avera, would it teach it in the context of Amun Umav Tiro B'Sichon, the context of conquering land from Sichon, which happened to have been conquered from Moav before? What's the relationship between the Cheshbon Shel Olam and the history of the land that we're going to get from Sichon instead of from Moav? So Rav Nevenzahl explains very beautifully that when you think about what must have been going through Sichon's mind when they conquered that land, they must have thought it's because of the great dedication of their army, the great strategies of war, and because they are so deserving that they now, maybe it was their Avodah Zarah or whatever it was, that caused them and that allowed them to be victorious over Moav. But in the Cheshbon Shel Olam, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Cheshbon, which is a much bigger Cheshbon than human beings can see, they were really just pawns. They were babysitters of the land until we can take it over. They were there. Their only role in history was so that the Jewish people could take the land from them, as opposed to taking it from Moav, because we weren't allowed to take it from Moav. And that's how the Cheshbon Shel Olam works very often. The reason why we fail in making Cheshbon Shel Olam is because we see things in a very narrow way. If we were able to see things in a broader perspective, from a long-term perspective, then the Cheshbon Shel Olam would be very simple. If you think about the idea of Schar Mitzvah, Bahay Al Malacha, that all the Hanos of Olam Hazeh are not even enough to equal the Schar of a single Mitzvah, so how much tircha is it really to get out of bed to go do a mitzvah? It's, I don't want to do it, I'm tired. But if you think about, if someone would give you $1 million, $10 million, of course you would do it. Now that doesn't even come close to what the schar mitzvah really is. It's only because we're narrowly looking at it in the moment right now, that right now it's difficult for me, so right now it seems like a challenge. But if you have the cheshbon shel olam, you have that broader perspective, then becomes much easier. That's the connection between the Cheshbon Shel Olam and Amun Umav Tiru B'Sichon. Okay, says the Gemara Vayter, third example of Psukim that seem to be Ra'oi Lisrof, Psukim that seem to be totally a waste of time, and nevertheless they teach us Gufei Torah. Tzidonim Yikaru L'Chermon Shiryon. The Pasuk tells us that Tzidonim Yikru L'Chermon Shiryon Ve'amori Yikru Lo Shnir. Tells us what they called the different cities, what they called Hermon, and who called them what. So Tana, Shnir v'Shiryon, Shnir and Shiryon, Shnir was the name given by the Amori, and the Sidonim called it Shiryon. So these names, Shnir v'Shiryon, where do they come from? Mehari Eretz Yisrael. They're really from the mountains of Eretz Yisrael. These are the names of different mountains in Eretz Yisrael. What does that teach us? Melamit shekol echad ve'echad me'umos ha'olam, it teaches us that each of the Umos HaOlam went and built themselves large cities, and they named these cities after the mountains of Eretz Yisrael. Why is that important for us to know? That even the mountains of Eretz Yisrael are beloved to the Umos HaOlam. That when we sometimes don't value Eretz Yisrael enough, we should think about those whose land it isn't, and how much they value it, the fact that they place such a premium in Eretz Yisrael to the point that their largest cities are going to be named not after great cities of Eretz Yisrael, it's not called Yerushalayim, but named after mountains of Eretz Yisrael, and just random mountains in Eretz Yisrael. That's how much they love Eretz Yisrael and they treasure Eretz Yisrael. So that's the Gufei Torah, that we need to remind ourselves of how important Eretz Yisrael is from a Jewish perspective. And Kayotzibo, and similarly a fourth pasuk that seems to be totally unnecessary, is when the Torah describes how Yosef rearranged the Egyptian settlement in Mitzrayim. And the pasuk says, V'esha'am heviros ol'arim mikzei gvul Mitzrayim al-katzeu, that Yosef took the people that lived in one part of Mitzrayim, moved them to another part of Mitzrayim, and moved people from the other part to the first part. He just moved people all around. So my nafkamino, who cares what Yosef did with the Egyptians? I'm interested in what Yosef did with the Egyptians to help the Jews, or with the Jewish people. Why does it matter? I'm sure he made a lot of political decisions as viceroy that the Torah does not record. He probably had a lot going on. Why does that get mentioned in the Torah? So the Lalikru La'achiv Galvasa. Now the point is that Yosef was being very thoughtful, and all of this was for his brothers. All of this was for the sake of Klal Yisrael, because the Jewish people are going to come in, and they're going to obviously live in a land that they never lived in before. So lest people say that the Jewish people, that the Achei Yosef, are exiled people, and they're people who aren't natives of the land that they live in, and therefore they're different and don't have the rights of a normal citizen, or shouldn't be treated as well as a normal citizen. Yosef made everybody exiled. He exiled everybody away from their original location in order that his brothers should be just like everybody else, should not be on a lower level than anybody else. So it's all because of Klal Yisrael. That's all part of the that's all part of the cheshbon that Yosef made. Now the Prima Gadim in the Mishnah Lemelech, rather, in his Sefer Prashas Drachim, explains this Gemara about Amun Umoav and about the Avim and the Avimelech and the Plishtim. He explains based on the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara in the Nedarim says that if a person takes a neder, Konim lebeischa shani nichnas, that I take a neder, I'm not going to enter into your house. O konim lebeisi shi'i ata nichnas, or a konim, that you're not a neder, you're not allowed to enter into my house. And then, mace o shemachru l'acherim, the person who owned the house dies. If I take a neder, that I'm not allowed to go into whatever, Reuven's house, and then Reuven dies, so am I allowed to go into the house now? Says the Gemara, mutter likanes, it's mutter to go into the house. Why? Because whenever you say Beischa, Beisi, it means dafka, if it's Bereshuscha, Bereshusi, you're dafka focusing on the ownership of the house. But whenever the house is not Bereshuso, so then it's mutter to enter. The same is true over here by Edom and Moab. When the Torah assers, or when Avram promises Avimelech that the Eretz is Aser, that their land is Aser, it's dafka artsam, artso, their land. It matters who is holding on to the land. It's not a din in the land, it's a din in the ownership of the land. And ownership can, and the Ritva points out, that you do see from here that ownership changes with Kibush Muhammad. Even though Karkein and Gzeles, normally we have a rule that land cannot be stolen, but because it just stays where it is, Kibush Milchama is able to change the ownership of the land. That's not called Nigzelas. That's not called that it's stolen. So that's the That's when Mishael Melech explains a whole pasuk in Shira Sayam based on this. He explains the pasuk of Nachs Pachas Chamzu Galt and the Halt of Azchon Vekat Shecha Shamu Amim Yergazim, that the Shamu Amim Yergazim is that even those nations that thought they have nothing to worry about because they thought that they're secure because they have promises either directly from Avram Avinu or in the Torah itself that Klal Yisrael is not allowed to do anything, but they heard about the other wars that took place where land started changing hands, and they even amongst the nations of the world, and they realized there's something to fear, because even though they seem secure, the people of Moab may have felt very secure in their land, they must have at some point they realized that they have to be very afraid, because if someone else takes it from them, then the Jewish people will be allowed to take it from those people, and they have no guarantees that they're going to stay on their land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be besaveh svivos, will come up with a way to make sure that it ends up in Jewish hands. Okay, says the Gemara now, Vaita. Now we're going to discuss the simanim of an oaf. So simanim ha'oaf lo nemru. First thing we know about simanim ha'oaf is that it's not explicitly mentioned in the Torah anywhere. The simanim behem, this was the Mishnah Daf Nun Tes Amud Aleph, told us the simanim behem of v'chaya, that it is said in the Torah, that there are two simanim that are very clear, but simanim ha'oaf, the Mishnah said, are not said anywhere in the Torah. It never tells us what signs to look for in a bird, but the Chachamim came up with certain signs that any oaf that's Doreis is Tameh, any oaf that has an Etzbi is Seira, and Zefek and Kurkavano Niklaf is Tahar. That if it has that extra Etzba, which was Machlok's Rishonim, whether it means that the Etzba, it has an Etzba facing backwards, or it means that it has that it has an elongated Etzba facing forward, and it has a crop, and it's Kurkavan, which is a part of the stomach, is Niklaf, can be easily peeled. Those are simanim of kashrus. So that's but those were all by the Chachamim. It doesn't say any of those things in the Torah. What the Torah does, it just lists 24 birds that are not kosher. It doesn't tell us what birds are kosher. Certain birds we know the Torah says are kosher because the Torah tells us to bring them as karbanos, and you can only bring kosher animals as karbanos. The Torah and Bnei Yonah, we know that those are definitely kosher because we bring those as karbanos. But the Torah, in terms of kashrus, only tells us identifies 24 birds that are not kosher. So, frek the Gemara velo, does the Torah really not tell me the simani kashrus of birds? Va'tanya, but we have a brisa nesher. We learn from the eagle, the nesher. It says nesher is normally translated as eagle. It's not so posh. Though, but anyway, nesher, whatever nesher is listed as one of the non-kosher birds. So man nesher miyuchad she'in lo etzbi yaseira, just like a nesher does not have this etzbi yaseira v'zefek, and it does not have a zefek ve'im kurkavano niklaf, and its kurkavan cannot be peeled v'dores v'yochel, and it eats through drisa, which again we discussed that when we saw the Mishnah, but this is where the Tosos is located, where he discusses what dores means. If you look at had Dores, he says, "Pirush b'kuntrus sha'ochis b'siparnuv magbia min hakarka masha ochel," that it grabs from the ground and picks up with its siparnayim, with its claws, what it eats. V'kasha l'Rabbi Natam, and the Rabbi Natam just has problems with that. Taha filu tarnagolas osakein, because the tarnagolas does that too, and the tarnagolas is definitely kosher. Umfarish Rabbi Natam, dores va'ochel mechayim ve'ino mamtin la'at shetamos. That dores va'ochel means that it's dores va'ochel when it catches its prey, it doesn't wait for the prey to die before eating it. Kehid de Perikei Luovrin, very similar to what the Gemara says in Perikei Luovrin, on the very last Amun of Perikei Luovrin, when the Gemara over there talks about the terrible qualities of an Amma Aretz and how far one must stay away from an Amma Aretz. The Gemara says, Hamasias Bitel Amma Aretz, Kilu Kofta Lefnei Ari, that if someone who marries his daughter off to an Amma Aretz, it's as if he's tying her down in front of a lion. Ma Ari Doris Va'ochel Veinu Mamtin Ad Shetamos, Av Amma Aretz Mako Bol Veinu Mamtin Ad Shetespayes. Just like a lion, as Doris Va'ochel attacks and eats and doesn't even wait for its prey to die, it will begin to eat it immediately. So too, Nama Aretz is going to be Boel, a woman, and he's not going to wait. Achet Tespayis, he's not going to wait to be Mephayis her, to get her to agree and to be in the mood. He's going to just immediately want to be Boel, his wife. So he's not going to treat his wife properly. He's not going to be Mamtin. He's not going to have patience with his wife in the bedroom, or probably anywhere else either. So that's why it's a very bad thing to be Masi Bito Lamaritz. But the point is, what's the Mashal and Nimshal? We're saying that it's like an Ari that's Doris V'Ochel. Doris V'Ochel means that it doesn't wait at Shetamas, doesn't wait for it to die. That's Rabbein Tam Shita. But anyway, what do we see? That the Nesher lacks any of the kosher qualities. It has four negative qualities in that it doesn't have the Yetzbi Yisera, doesn't have a Zefek, doesn't have Korkavano Niklef, and is Doris V'Ochel. So, and we know the Nesher is Tameh, the Nesher is a non-kosher bird. So says the Braisa, Av Kol Kayotzi Bo Tameh. So any bird that has these similar four negative qualities is going to be Tameh. But Torin, Sheishla, and Etzbe Yisera, on the other hand, what do we know is definitely a kosher bird? A Tor is definitely a kosher bird. Tor tells us you're allowed to bring it as a korban, so we know for sure it's a kosher bird. Now, what are the qualities that a Tor has? So Torin are Yeshla and Etzbe Yisera, they have the Etzbe Yisera, Vizefek, they have Vizefek, Vikorkovan Niklaf, the Korkovan could be peeled, Vain Darsin Va'ochlin, and they're not Doris Va'ochel, so Torin, so they're Tor. Avkol Kayotzi Ben Torin, so too, any bird that has those four positive qualities is kosher. So now it sounds like it's a steer from the ratio of the safe of the Braisa. I mean, what we're trying to say is we're quoting this Braisa to say, look, you see, the Torah itself hints to simani kashas of a bird. How can you tell me that it doesn't appear anywhere in the Torah, that simani kashas of a bird don't appear anywhere in the Torah? According to this Braisa, it's the contrast between the Nesher and the Torin that we're able to figure out what the simani kashas are. But in the Braisa itself, there seems to be an inherent stira, because the first half of the Braisa says that what makes a non-kosher bird? That which has all four negative qualities. But then the second half says, what makes a kosher bird? So I would say anything that has only three of the negative qualities. But no, it says anything that has all four positive qualities, which leaves a lot of room in between. And there's no such thing as a bird that's in between kosher and non-kosher. It's got to be one or the other. So if you look at Rashi, Nesher huzkar b'tmeim, v'dan in binyan avimenu. Nesher is mentioned amongst the non-kosher birds, and we learn a binyan av from Nesher. Deman Nesher miyuchad. Dein lo echem mikol simanim alalu. Just like a Nesher does not have any of these simanim vitame, and it's not kosher. Av kol shein lo echem mikol simanim alalu. Min Nesher hu vitame. Interesting line, Rashi says. So too, anything that doesn't have any of these simanim, min Nesher, must be some type of Nesher, and therefore is not kosher. Aval ov sheish bo echem mikol elu. Tahar, but a bird that doesn't have one of these things, any one of these negative qualities missing, then it's going to be kosher. The kol shein shnayim or shlosh or kulam. Certainly, a bird that is missing two of these negative qualities, or three of these negative qualities, or is missing all four of these negative qualities, one, of course, that's going to be kosher. Except for, there are 24 birds mentioned in the Torah, many of them do not have all four, none of them really, have all four negative qualities that the Nesher has. Most of them have three of them, but none of them have all four negative qualities that the Nesher has. So even though the Din, Rashi tells us, is that what makes a bird non-kosher, all four negative qualities are needed to make it not kosher. If it has any of the positive qualities, if it doesn't, if it only has three out of the four negative qualities, it is by definition kosher. Except there are exceptions to the rule, and the Torah lists those exceptions. That's what the list is all about in the Torah. The other 23 birds mentioned in the Torah are the exceptions to that rule. V'hai af lo marbi ela min nesher. But says Rashi, what's Rashi telling us? How do you read this Braisa? That when we use Torin as a prototype of kosher, we're not saying that in order to be kosher you need all four qualities that Torin have. You only need one of the kosher qualities to be kosher. To be non-kosher, you need all four of the non-kosher qualities. So the Reisha is really Meduyak, and the Seifa is less Meduyak. That you really only need one kosher quality to be kosher. So V'hai Af Lomarbi Elimineshe. But even within the non-kosher birds, it's very strange, because the Torah lists, gives us an exhaustive list of all 24 non-kosher birds. So what do you mean? There are Simanim, that it needs these four negative qualities to not be kosher. So any bird that doesn't have, that has these four negative qualities, is not kosher. What do you mean, any bird? There are only 24 birds that aren't kosher. So says Rashi, you know, the Af is there to teach you that any bird that that has these four negative qualities, that doesn't have any of the positive qualities, is by definition a nesher. It's not that it's another type of bird that the Torah just didn't tell us about that's also not kosher. No, the Torah gave us an exhaustive list of every single not kosher bird. But it's called a nesher. That puts it in the category of a nesher. Now, Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos writes that it's not so clear that that's the case, that it's necessarily going to be a nesher, that you could perhaps say that the reason it tells us the non-kosher birds is because by telling us these 24 non-kosher birds, we're able to recognize kol of tamei shebi'olam, given the qualities that a nesher has. And given this other list that the Torah gives us, we are now equipped to identify every non-kosher bird. But not that every bird that shares the qualities of a nesher is by definition a nesher, it's just by definition not kosher. But it's not necessarily a nesher, it's some other min that's also not kosher. It basically, what I was saying is, it doesn't have to be on the list of the 24 to be not kosher. It just has to be that when we have the list of 24, including the nesher, we have to be able to identify every bird that's not kosher. But that list does not have to, doesn't say anywhere that list has to be an exhaustive list. It could be that there are other birds out there that are like the nesher, but we should know that those birds that are like the nesher, that have all four negative qualities, are not kosher. So it turns out, if one were to bring a bird, lefanein, if someone were to bring a bird to us that doesn't have a single siman tara, has all four simane tuma, so what would the halacha be? So very clear, according to Rashi, you call that bird a nesher. I don't care what it looks like, just call it a nesher, because it's a nesher, it's in the nesher family. And therefore it's not kosher. According to Tosfos, don't call it a nesher, but it's not kosher anyway, because we learn from nesher that any bird that doesn't have a single tara quality is not kosher. However, the Rambam in Machol Sasuris Parakal Valachat Hazvav writes, "Kol mishu baki b'minim elu b'shmosehen." Anyone who knows of who understands and has expertise in identifying all 24 birds that are not kosher that are mentioned in the Torah, hareze ochel kol of she'enu mehen ve'enu tzarach bedika. You can eat any bird that's not on that list of 24. And you don't need to check anything. Essentially, what the Rambam is telling us, sounds like from the Rambam, if a bird comes that doesn't seem to have any of the kosher qualities, but you know that it's not any of the 24 mentioned on the list, memela it's kosher, because the list is an exhaustive list. So the Pritor asks on the Rambam, what's the Gemara coming to tell me then over here by the comparison to Nesher? According to Rashi, we learn from Nesher that anything that doesn't have the simanim is by definition going to be called a Nesher. According to Tosfos, we'll say, okay, it's not called a Nesher, but it's not kosher. According to the Rambam, it's going to be kosher, anything that doesn't have any of the simanim. So what exactly are we learning from the Nesher? What are we saying that just like a Nesher doesn't have, has four simane tuma, doesn't have any of the simane tara, so to what? Any other bird that doesn't have any simane tara, according to the Rambam, is kosher. So what's the Gemara saying? What's the Gemara darshaning? So in the Tshuvas of the Chassam Sofer in Yerodeh, Simenayim Dalin, he's miyashik based on the Tosfos Maseches Nida, Daf Nun Amud Beis. Tosfos Maseches Nida writes that even though, generally speaking, we have a rule called a yotzi min haTorah tahar, anything that comes out of a kosher animal, like let's say the milk of a cow, is kosher. Because the cow is kosher, the milk that comes from the cow is kosher. Now, if you were to have a cow that wasn't kosher, a cow that's a trefa, so the milk that comes from that cow is not kosher. That's the whole controversy with the milk in recent years, with trying to figure out whether the milky cows, the majority of them are actually trefos or not trefos. But that's generally the rule that we have. Says Tosfos Maseches Nida, the rule of kol yotzei min haTorah tahar is only by a behema, not by an oaf. A tarnagolas that's matil beitza, that lays an egg, and out of that egg comes a little bird that doesn't have a siman tara, that little bird is going to be not kosher, because it doesn't really come, it's not really direct yotzei min haTorah. It doesn't really come directly from the bird, it's a little bit more removed. It comes from the egg which came from the bird. So that's that. Then we wouldn't say the rule of kol yotzei min haTorah. So Tosa says that nevertheless, if that bird has a siman tara, even though it's not the same siman tara, simane tara that its mother has, nevertheless, it's going to be mutter, because it's not doma l'nesher. But if it didn't have any siman tara, it would be asur min hatara, because then it would be doma l'nesher. And even if it's dores and it has other simani tara, it would be mutter, because it's not doma l'nesher. As long as it has any siman tara, it would be mutter, because it's not doma l'nesher. So based on that, says Chassam Sofer, now we understand what the Gemara is coming to include with man nesher. It's not coming to include some other species. It's coming to include when a kosher bird has a baby that appears to be a non-kosher bird, as long as it's not doma 100% to a nesher, so then it becomes kosher. Since it's the combination of the fact that its mother is kosher and it's not doma l'nesher, that's what's that makes it kosher. Maybe that's how the Rambam understands our Gemara. A little bit difficult. I mean, that's how the Rambam. That's the one case that this Bryce is coming to teach me. The case where a mother has a child that's a different min than the mother is a very, very unusual case. Which, granted, Mishnayos talk about all the time, but that's the one case that, according to the Rambam, that's what the man nesher is coming to teach me over here in this Brisa. Anyway, but bottom line is, in our Gemara, what are we trying to do over here? We said, the Mishnah said, that there's no simanim of oaf mentioned in the Torah. So, frankly, Gemara, what do you mean there are no simanim of oaf mentioned in the Torah? Just compare nesher to torin, and look at the four defining, distinguishing characteristics between nesher and torin, and you learn that there are four simanim tara. So you do have simanim in the Torah. Some Rabbi answers, no, lo nemar perushon midivrei Torah, ele midivrei sofrim. It never says a word in the Torah about being dores, about kurkavano niklaf, about a zefek. It never mentions the etzba yisera. The details aren't mentioned in the Torah. The Torah only speaks about generalities of what's kosher, what's not kosher. It requires the divrei sofrim to expound on that and to identify what those simanim are, as opposed to by behemoth. And by fish, it says explicitly what the simanim are. It doesn't just give me types of behemoths and chayos that are kosher and not kosher and leave it to the chacham to figure out what the underlying characteristics are. By behema and by fish, it says explicitly. So in that sense, birds are different. That it's not granted. It may be dinim daraisa. Right, it may be the simanim may be da'oraisa, but they're not explicit in the Torah. They're only learnt out midivrei sofrim. Tanu Rebbi Chiya, ofa ba b'simen echad tahar. If you have a bird that's brought to you that has one simen of kashrus, then it's kosher. Lufisha ain't domel a nesher, because it's not like a nesher. A nesher has no simanim of kashrus. Nesher d'las le'klal hu d'lo teichol, ha'ika d'islechad teichol. What we learn from nesher is, a nesher doesn't have any of the simanim of kashrus, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it, but a bird that has any single simon of kashrus, you are allowed to eat. So, frech the Gemara, why would you learn from nesher? Why don't we learn the other way around? V'leilef mitorin is what we alluded to before. Why don't we learn from the kosher bird? Ma torin di'ika kulhu arba'a, af hachanami ad di'ika kulhu arba'a. We know that Torin are kosher, and we know that Torin have all four simanei tara. So why don't I learn as follows? That in order for a bird to be kosher, it needs to be like Torin, and that it needs all four simanei tara. That one should not suffice. One simanei tara should not be enough. So says Gemara, if that were the case, that you need all four simanei tara, Imkain Shar Ofus Tmei, the Kasv Rachman Alamali. Why does the Torah have to waste so many words giving me a list of 24 non-kosher birds? Just tell me that a nesher is not kosher. Tell me that a torin are kosher, and I'll learn from torin that you need all four simani tara. The whole rest of that list don't have all four simani tara. Most of them have three or what? They don't have all four simani tara. So I'll automatically know it. The fact that the Torah goes out of its way to give me that entire list shows me that you must not need all four simanei tara in order to be kosher, and therefore that list is a list of exceptions to the rule. That the real rule is even a single simanei tara is enough to make it kosher, but that whole list with the other 23 birds aside from nesher are all exceptions to the rule. That even though they have certain simanei tara, nevertheless they're not kosher. So frak the Gemara v'nelef minayhu mahasam t'lasa v'lo achlinon afkal t'lasa v'lo nechal v'kol shkein. Well, why don't we learn from that? Instead of saying that the list is a list of exceptions, why don't we say that we should learn from the list what the rule actually is? That just like on many of the birds on the list, most of the birds on the list, 20 of the birds on the list, have three simanei kashrus, and you're not allowed to eat them, so too, any bird that has three simanei kashrus, you're not allowed to eat, and certainly if a bird only has two simanei kashrus, or if a bird only has one siman of kashrus, you would not be allowed to eat it. And therefore, at the end of the day, the same rule that we wanted a suggestion apply, that you should need all four to be kosher. Instead of saying that we learn from Nesher that the only time a bird is not kosher is when it has zero of the four, we should learn from Torah that it needs all four. And if you're not going to learn from Torah, learn it from the list itself, that all these are non-kosher because they don't have all four simani kashrus. But you do, in fact, need all four simani kashrus. So says Gemara, if that's what the list is doing, if it were meant to be a prototype, im kein orev the kasav rachmana lamali. Well, then why would the Torah have to tell me that an orev is not kosher? Because the halacha, because an orev, the Gemara is going to identify the mitzias. Hashta di islay tlasalo achlinan. If 20 of the birds on the list have three simani kashrus, and you're still not allowed to eat them, Disle trei mi bayin orev has two of the simani kashrus. Would I then need to be told that I'm not allowed to eat that? Meaning, if the list was not meant as exceptions, the list was meant to teach me the rule. So good, teach me the rule about birds that have three simani kashrus, that those birds are not kosher. And then I will know for sure that if it only has two simani kashrus like the orev, then of course it's not kosher. And that's why, right now, we have to assume that the list is a list of exceptions, and it's not a list from which to learn the halacha. So, frak the Gemara, v'leilif me orev, mahasum treylo, afkol treylo. Well, why don't we learn from orev? So that just like an orev has two simani kashrus and you can't eat from it, so to anything that has two simani kashrus, you can't. Meaning, granted, at this point, what we've said is if it has three simani kashrus, it can't be a rule that you're not allowed to eat from something that has three simani kashrus, because why would it mention orev then? Because if you're not allowed to eat from something that has three simani kashrus, of course you're not allowed to eat from something that has two simani kashrus. Okay, so normally you would assume you are allowed to eat from something that has three simani kashrus. It's just that the Torah gives us 20 exceptions to that rule. But maybe we should learn from Orev that you are not allowed to eat from anything that has two simani kashrus. So says Gemara, im kein paras vaznia de kasav rachmana lamali. There are two birds on the list that have only one simani kashrus. So why are those birds mentioned on the list? If a bird that has two simani kashrus is not allowed to be eaten, so a bird that has one simani kashrus, all the more so, should not be allowed to be eaten. So hashu disle treilo achlinan disle chan mi bayi. If the orev, which has two simani kashrus, cannot be eaten, the paras vaznia, which have only one simani kashrus, do you need to even tell me that it can't be eaten? The fact that the Torah tells it to me must mean that normally a bird that has two simani kashrus can be eaten. And orev is an exception. It's not the source of a rule. It's an exception to the rule that even though it has two simani kashrus, it cannot be eaten. So, frak the Gemara, okay, v'nigmur in paras vaznia. But why don't we learn from paras vaznia that something that has only one siman kashrus is not kosher? That instead of saying, like we've been saying all along, that the rule is that in order to not be kosher, it can't have any simani kashrus, why don't we learn from paras vaznia that in order for it to not be kosher, having only one simani kashrus makes it not kosher, is not enough to make it kosher. You need at least two simani kashrus to make it kosher, because paras vaznia have one simani kashrus and they're not kosher. So maybe instead of viewing them as exceptions to the rule, we should view them as the basis of the rule. Say im kein nesher de kasav rachmana lamali. No, because if that were true, that one simani kashrus does not suffice, and it's still not kosher even when it has one siman kashrus, why would the Torah mention that a nesher is not kosher? A nesher has zero simani kashrus. So essentially the way it breaks down is you have 20 birds that have three simani kashrus. You have one bird, the orev, that has two simani kashrus. You have two birds, the paras vaznia, that have one simani kashrus. And you have one bird, the nesher, that has zero simani kashrus on the list. So if you're going to tell me that anything that has one simani kashrus is, by definition, going to be non-kosher, well then why would the Torah even have to mention nesher? Hasha disle chad lo achlinan. Anything that has a single simani kashrus, you're not allowed to eat. The less like klal mi bayi. Do you need to tell me that if it doesn't have any simani kashrus, you're not allowed to eat it? Ella nesher de less like klal hu de lo techol, ha de isle chad achol. So rather we stick with the maskana that we had in Amud Aleph, and all these kashrus fall away. The rule is that just like the nesher has none of the simani kashrus, and that's why it's not allowed to be eaten, and that's the source of the rule, that anything that has even a single simon of kashrus may be eaten. That anything that has even a single simon of kashrus, is a kosher bird. It's only a nesher, that's only something that doesn't have any simani kashrus, which Rashi says by definition is always going to be a nesher, but anything that only something that doesn't have any simani kashrus, that cannot be eaten. What about all the birds listed in the Torah that have three, two, or one simani kashrus? Those are exceptions to the rule. Vel time of the kosher achmana nesha. So wait a second. Now what we're saying, based on the way we just understood the psukim, is the reason why a single simon kashrus is enough to make a bird kosher is because the Torah told me about a nesher. Halav hachi havamina leiv mi paras vaznia. Had the Torah not told me about a nesher, the way we just analyzed the whole discussion, the way it would emerge is, had the Torah not told me about a nesher, a single simon kashrus would mean that the bird is not kosher. You would need two simani kashrus to tell me that it's kosher. Had the Torah not said nesher. So havle paras vaznia shneksum naban kecha. But wait a second. Why would I have thought that? Why would I think that from paras vaznia I would learn that a single simon kashrus would not make the bird kosher? Aren't they shneksum naban kechad? That they're both cases. The Torah tells me about two birds that each have one simon of kashrus, and both of them are non-kosher, and we wanted to say, so you'd learn from there that any time a bird has one siman of kashrus, it's not kosher. No, it's not the way limudim from the Torah work. If the Torah tells me in one place a din, then I can apply a binyanav to kala Torah kula. But if the Torah tells me a chiddush twice, well then, ein l'chabo al chiddush, so then it's limited to where the Torah tells me the chiddush, then it's shnei k'suvin aban kechad. We cannot be malami to a binyanav to everywhere else in the Torah. So, shnei k'suvin aban kechad ein malam din. So this is a strange kasha. It's a kasha on what we would have learned had the Torah not said what the Torah actually does say. So it's a bit of a strange kasha. And it says, Gemara, Gemiri, Dikabai, Lekabai, Dikabai, Lekabai. No, it's not a problem because Paras Vaznia each come to teach me a chiddush that the other one doesn't teach me. Because granted, they each have only one Simon Kashrus, but they're not the same Simon Kashrus. And since they're not the same Simon Kashrus as each other, so therefore each one is coming to teach me what the other one doesn't teach me, and therefore they're able to teach me Bibinyanav. It's not Shnek Suma Ban Kechad, it's not an extraneous pasuk. So Michti says, Gemara, wait a second. Esav Arba Ofus Tmeim Havu. There are 24 non kosher birds listed in the Torah. E efshar dechad diika bahanach leka bahani vahavalu shneksum aban kechad. It still should be shneksum aban kechad because either the Paris or the Aznia, they each have one simon kashrus. That simon kashrus must appear in one of the other birds that is not kosher. In one of the other birds that's mentioned in the list, that's not kosher. So mele, it's still shneksum naban kechad because you still see that simon is should not be used as a prototype to teach me that it's not enough to make a bird kosher. So says Gemara no Gemiri. We learn as follows: esim arba ofos tmeim havu. There are 24 non kosher birds. Va'arba simanim. There are 4 simani kashrus. The same 3 simani kashrus, whatever they are, the Gemara doesn't identify which they are. The same 3 simani kashrus appear in 20 of them. Meaning, when we say that 20 have 3 simani kashrus, doesn't mean that some of them have simin 1, 2, and 3, some have 1, 2, and 4, some have 1, 3, and 4. No, all of them have the same 3. All 20 of them have the same 3. Utreba orev, 2 of the simani kashrus appear in orev. Chad beparis, chad baznia. One of them appears in Paris, one in Aznia. Di se baha less a baha. But that which the Paris has, the Aznia doesn't. So mao de tema leilif minah, I might think to learn from there, to learn from the Paris Vaznia, that a single simon kashrus does not suffice to make a bird kosher, kas rachman a nesher. Nesher, that's why the pasuk has to tell me about a nesher. Nesher, the less leiklalu to lo techal, nesher, which doesn't have any simani kashrus, you cannot eat, ha'ika de isleichad achal. But if a bird has even a single simon of kashrus, then you can eat. But bottom line is, the Gemara's kashu was that the Paris Vaznia, shouldn't they be shnei? So the Gemara's answer is that no, the simon kashrus that one of them has, we don't know which one, but that one of them has, is a simon kashrus that no other bird has. Mela, it's not a shnei k'suvin aban kechad, because it's coming to teach me a chiddush that doesn't apply, that we don't find by any other bird, because all 20 that have the 3 simanim have the same 3 simanim. The Orif has 2 of those simanim. So either the Paris or the Aznia, one of them has this 4th simon that never appeared in any of the other birds. And that's a chiddush, and therefore it's not shnei k'suvin habain ke'echad. Okay, we'll stop there.